Welcome to Soulful Insights, where we break free from trauma, reclaim power, and step into full spiritual sovereignty through healing, breathwork, hypnotherapy, and subconscious reprogramming. I'm your host, Tandy, and today we're diving into one of the most deeply ingrained systems of control that has shaped women's lives for centuries: patriarchal conditioning. From the way we work, to the way we are expected to serve in relationships, religious systems that have kept women in a state of submission and silence, to secular culture as a whole and the way that women are treated and seen. It is time to break free. What if I told you that much of what you believe about your worth, your role in the world, and in your relationships, your purpose, has been programmed into you, not for your empowerment, but for external control? What if reclaiming your power meant completely unlearning the rules you were raised with and redefining what it means to be a woman on your own terms? Many women believe that if they were not raised in a religious home or with oppressive religious dogma, that they're completely unaffected by patriarchy. This is a lie. Our entire culture is founded upon the exploitation of women, and women are some of the most ardent proponents of secular patriarchy. You might be one of them and not even know it. So, this episode is for every woman. So many women are caught up in either religious patriarchy, secular patriarchy, all of it. And it is holding you down whether you realize it or not. This episode is going to be long. I'm not going to lie. Listen to it in segments. Get a cup of coffee, some green tea, get cozy, go for a walk, whatever you need to do. But you need to hear this. Listen to it in 20-minute sections if you need to, whatever it may be. Listen to it on an airplane with your earbuds, but you need to hear this. We are going to be talking about societal structures that keep women overworked, undervalued, constantly seeking external validation, and remaining disconnected from their feminine power. The religious programming that has conditioned women to serve, submit, and silence themselves. Now, religious programming is only a tiny part of this, honestly, and that is where the lie infiltrates itself into women who don't go to church or who aren't religious. So regardless, this is important for all women. Patriarchy erases a woman's authentic self, even in the secular world. And we're going to look at how. It causes women to believe that external validation, success, money, serving others, climbing corporate ladders, denying her feminine power, that's what gives her value. It's time to reclaim the feminine power, autonomy, and voice. It's time to reclaim your voice by breaking free from this conditioning and stepping into true sovereignty. The system's rigged. Society strips women of their power. They just don't know it. They think it's all religious. It isn't. From the moment you enter the world as a female, you are conditioned to adapt to a system that was never designed for you. Society demands productivity over presence, exhaustion over intuition, constant output over cyclical flow. Women are not just expected to keep up with this male-centric model of success. They are shamed by other women if they don't. Women are taught to serve the male-centric model of productivity. One of the biggest ways society strips women of their feminine power is by forcing them into a system built for men. The corporate world, the school system, the structures of success are designed around the masculine solar cycle. Hang in there. I will explain this and you will understand what I'm talking about. It is designed around male hormonal cycles, which operates on a 24-hour rhythm like the sun. But it completely ignores the 28-day cyclical nature of feminine energy. So let's look at the 24-hour male hormone cycle. Men wake up with high testosterone and a lot of energy in the morning, making them naturally primed for action and productivity. Throughout the day, their hormones gradually decline, and by the evening, their body resets for the next morning. Simple, 24-hour schedule. Their energy is stable and predictable, allowing them to perform consistently every day. single day. This is why our work days, school days, and every other schedule is dominated by the 24-hour schedule, without honoring the feminine 28-day cycle, which requires more rest, more introspection, and time away from the grind at certain times during the 28-day cycle in order to be healthy in body, mind, and soul. And I know some of you will say, I work every day, it's fine. Well, a lot of women always say they're fine because they want to feel like they are fitting in, they're successful. Can women do everything that men can do? Yes. But sometimes it still looks different. Can you accomplish everything he accomplishes? Yes. But it might look a little bit different, just in the way that you approach something. We all approach things different. It doesn't mean good or bad. The problem is we've prioritized male as being good and female as being bad. And so when you say, oh, a woman might approach this differently, all of a sudden everyone gets scared. The 28-day female cycle. Women cycle through four distinct hormonal phases, each with different energy levels, creativity peaks, and rest requirements. There are times when women feel highly energized, social, and productive, and times when they naturally need rest, introspection, and renewal. Instead of honoring these biological rhythms, society forces women to push through exhaustion, ignore their intuition, and work as if they function like men. The result? Burnout, chronic stress, hormonal imbalances, difficulty losing weight, higher cortisol levels, and disconnection from the body's wisdom. Now, the results of living in this way can be different for every single woman, but I promise you, if you are living in the daily grind, you aren't healthy. Women are expected to work harder while ignoring their needs. Women are told that in order to be successful, they must show up in the same energy every day, regardless of where they are in their cycle. Women show up with menstrual cramps that drop men to their knees, and they work all day like that, and we expect it. They ignore their body signals for rest, renewal, and reflection because taking a break is seen as weak or unproductive. They push through exhaustion and burnout because instead of honoring the natural rhythm of work, creation, and rest, they have to look like men. Women have to prove themselves constantly in male-dominated spaces, while men are seen as natural leaders without any need to justify their presence. Not only this, but women are expected to be in the corporate world, climbing a corporate ladder, getting degrees. If you are a woman who stays at home as a mother, or a woman who embraces other means of making a living that are not seen as successful within the framework of college education and the daily grind, you're looked down upon, even by other women, especially feminists, because feminists want us to go about the daily grind like a man. They do not want us to honor the feminine, which is very interesting considering what they call themselves. Women who embrace what it means to be feminine are actually seen as against the so-called feminist movement. In the feminist movement, women must look like men so they can have the same respect as men. Is this really feminist, or is it just asking women to act like men to gain respect? Women should be respected for who they are and what they are in any area that they are in, regardless. We don't have to act like men in order to have respect. Meanwhile, when a woman physically, emotionally, or mentally struggles to maintain this unrealistic level of constant performance, she is told she is too emotional or too sensitive. She needs to toughen up and stop making excuses. She isn't ambitious enough if she chooses a path that honors rest and balance. But here's the truth that society won't tell you. The world was built on a masculine system, but that doesn't mean you have to live by it. Women were never meant to operate like men, and when they try to, they lose connection with their greatest strength, their intuition, their creativity, their ability to flow with life instead of fighting against it. Reclaiming your power and working with your feminine energy instead of working against it is crucial. We need the balance of the feminine and masculine. To give you an example of why this doesn't work, if the sun represents the masculine, what happens if we don't have the moon and night? If we just have sun 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, what happens? Everything would burn up. Our lakes would dry up. everything, it would literally kill everything eventually. You cannot have only masculine energy. And the problem is, when we look at the feminist movement, it's all masculine energy. And I understand why. It's all masculine energy because that's where the respect is. So they're just jumping over into that bandwagon so that they can gain the respect that they want. Instead of saying, no, we actually need the moon. So instead of forcing yourself to be productive every day, start working with your energy cycles. Recognize that rest is not laziness. It's the foundation of sustainable success. And that men have feminine energy as well. They need rest. They just deny it as well. We deny the feminine aspect of everything. Give yourself permission to embrace the feminine flow of creation, action, renewal, and reflection, because this is how you thrive. You're going to notice times during your cycle where you just can't think straight. You're struggling to remember things. You're struggling to focus. It may not be lower energy. It may just be like, I just am struggling to focus today. My brain feels all over the place. That is a sign that you're pushing too hard. It's time for rest. It's time to back off. When you, in any way that you possibly can, reclaim your feminine rhythm, you unlock a level of power, creativity, and fulfillment that society never wanted you to access. Will you keep playing by these masculine rules, or will you break the chains and reclaim your true feminine power? Now let's look at another aspect of secular patriarchy. Women are objectified, not respected. And a lot of women will see this in the workplace, where they offer ideas or suggestions in a boardroom. And more, they've done studies on this. More often than not, women's suggestions are overlooked versus men's suggestions. There is an entire culture that sees women as objects to be consumed for men. It's a transactional thing rather than I see you as an equal. Not all men are this way, but society as a whole is. From the moment a female is born, they are groomed to believe that their primary value is how they look and how visually pleasing they are to men. Young girls are not praised for their intelligence, for their wisdom, power, for their leadership skills, talents, knowledge, athleticism, or power. They are never complimented for those things. They're always called pretty or cute. It's always their looks. Society teaches us that our bodies exist for display, for approval, and for male consumption. And the worst part? Many women don't even realize they've been conditioned to accept this as normal. The female body is a commodity. So I'm going to give you an example from a Rock and Gem show that I went to last weekend. And I was struck by something deeply unsettling. Gems, minerals, crystals carved into graphic depictions of the female body. Now, at first glance, some people think this is harmless or maybe even beautiful. It's art. Don't people say the female body is a work of art? Is that really how we do we say that about men, though? The male body is a work of art? Not usually. But let's look at this idea. Let's look at it deeper. It's, you know, oh, okay, it's a work of art. You're saying a positive thing, right? But let's actually break this down. Is that really how we want people to view women? Do we really just want to be objectified? I want to tell you, these graphic depictions of the female body, I've never seen anybody that looks like that unless they had plastic surgery. So now what does that say? Is the female body really a work of art untouched in its natural form? Or do you think the female body that you see in magazines and all this other garbage is art? Because that isn't art. It's fake. And you know what that does? It sets an impossible standard for women. And then women get condemned. Plastic surgery, they are mocked. And yet the standard is plastic surgery. What are we doing? Women are not a, quote, form. Do not allow people to reduce you to a form or an object. Women are not to just be posted on a wall or collector's items. They are human beings with intelligence and creativity and personality and so much more. And we need to reject this idea that we are just something to pin up on a wall or hang from the rearview mirror or slap on a mud flap on a truck. That is not what we are. And if you do not stand up against this, you are part of the problem. You are part of the patriarchy. Women are human beings with inherent value, intelligence, strength, wisdom, intuition, and value far beyond their physical appearance. And it is a tragedy that we allow this disrespectful treatment towards women to continue in the 21st century. And yet we do. But let's go deeper. What does this message actually send? All the pictures, all of the mud flaps, all of the carvings, all of the things. Oh, women are art. That a woman's body is meant to be displayed, purchased, consumed, and collected is the utmost disrespect for what a woman truly is. Do you know what her body does? Do you want me to tell you something? Yes, I studied as a midwife as well. I wear many hats. Let me tell you something. We don't wrap babies in blankets when they're born. Why? Did you know that when that baby is skin to skin with the mother and the baby's body temperature drops, do you want to know what the mother's body does? Her temperature rises to keep that baby warm. Do you know what happens when a mother is nursing a baby and that baby is getting sick? Her body reads the saliva of that baby and produces antibodies for that baby because that baby's immune system is not fully online yet. Do you see what a miracle it is? It is not meant to be displayed, purchased, consumed, or collected. Yes, it's beautiful, but for so many other reasons than just to pleasure men. Only a very tiny percentage of women even fit this unattainable standard in order to be considered valuable enough for display, purchase, consumption, or as a collector's item. And when we do this, we reduce women to less than human. It conveys the message that women are objects, not individuals. Their form is valuable, but their intelligence, ideas, voice, and value are ignored. That is the problem when you call women the female form is art. You ignore her intelligence. You ignore her emotion, her ideas, her value, her individuality. She's not just a form. It teaches society that men are the consumers, the buyers, the ones with power, while women are simply the product to be purchased, consumed, and displayed like a coin collection. Do you not understand that all of these things that you justify as normal put men in power and women as the product? Think about that for a minute. Is that really the type of society we want to live in the 21st century still? Women need to rise. We are not products to be consumed. And if you want to be equal to men, you're going to have to stop being such. Women are photoshopped, airbrushed, and surgically altered until they no longer resemble anything natural or real. This is done in social media, magazines, pornography, everywhere you go. In Hollywood, the feminine body is so distorted into something that exists solely only for male pleasure, erasing the beauty of natural, diverse, and aging women. We are all different sizes. You know, I'm 4'11" on a good day. You know, I couldn't be a model. It wouldn't matter how beautiful I was. It wouldn't matter. Why? Nope. In order to be beautiful, you got to be 5'10". I don't know why. How many women are actually that tall? Very, very, very few women are over that height. But yet, that's the standard. Women are diverse. Some of us have tiny bone structures. Some of us have big bone structures. Some are short. Some are tall. Some of us have thicker thighs. Some of us have really, really tiny thighs. Some of us have really strong arms. Some of us are more muscular. Some of us are not. Some of us are 20. Some of us are 90. All of it is beautiful. All of it is a part of the natural cycle of life. Oh no, we can't see the beauty. What? A 50-year-old woman being beautiful? No. That's not a thing. You realize in our society, by the time you're 40, you're washed up. Nobody wants you. You're not beautiful. Men won't even take you seriously. Oh, they'll really like the 30-year-old that they think is beautiful, but the 40-year-old, they'll walk right by. They don't care because you don't serve them anymore. You don't serve their pleasure anymore. Women are expected to chase an unattainable standard, but then they're condemned for getting plastic surgery. Constantly investing in beauty products, cosmetic procedures, and self-surveillance to meet impossible expectations, and then putting on the tiny little clothes to show off all the work they've done. Most women wouldn't even blink an eye at seeing a gemstone shaped into a hyper-sexualized female form. They wouldn't even think about it. That's how deep the conditioning runs. Women are not even fighting their own objectification. They don't even care. They're falling into the very trap that keeps them in the patriarchal system. Women complain about the statistics showing that women's ideas in office meetings are far less likely to be considered or implemented than the ideas of a man. And yet they turn a blind eye to all of these reasons men don't take women seriously. Men see you as a commodity to be used, not as an intelligent human being to be listened to or respected. And that's not going to change until we stop acting like commodities. And it is not just in this aspect. Men see women as commodities. What is a wife? She stays home. She cleans the house. She cooks the meals. She does the laundry. She bears the children. She raises the children. And she may even have a job on top of that. But everything that she does is about pleasing him. It's transactional. She's a commodity. He needs the house cleaned. He needs the kids taken care of. He needs the laundry done. He needs the meals cooked. It doesn't matter. You're still a commodity. He doesn't have to take care of himself. You're going to do it. The beauty industry keeps women trapped in this cycle. Social media, with all of its filters, the mainstream media, all reinforce the idea that a woman's worth is measured by her ability to be visually appealing to men. Women's bodies are policed and commented on from birth. Girls are praised for being cute or pretty instead of being intelligent or curious or creative or a leader. Men openly comment on women's bodies, their weight, and their appearance as if they have the right to critique or approve of women. She does not visually please me. She's too fat. She's too thin. Whatever. I remember being in high school with a group of kids and the boys were calling girls 50-yard fakeouts because they looked like they'd be pretty from 50 yards away, but when they get close up, they're not. This is patriarchy. Here's another one. A lot of women are going to get mad about this. I don't care because we've got to stop this somehow. And if it changes one person's mind, then I have accomplished my goal. One more person in the world that's not buying into this crap. Women's clothing is designed for display, not function. Look at the difference between teenage boys and teenage girls' clothing, for example. Boys' clothes are functional, comfortable, and designed for movement. Girls' clothes are tighter, shorter, and often impractical. Why? Do you see boys wearing booty shorts? Why are boys not wearing booty shorts? What is the reason for that? Why do we not have teenage boys' butts hanging out of their shorts in high school? Why are they not doing that? I will tell you, it's not purity culture that's making boys not do that. Let's examine one item of clothing, the tank top. So let's look at a boy's tank top. Boys' tank tops have wider straps. They're not spaghetti straps. They're wider straps and they have better underarm coverage most of the time. I mean, yes, I understand. I'm talking about a tank top that a boy is going to, if he was going to wear it to school. Okay. I'm not talking about going and playing basketball with the guys or going to the gym. That's different. But then we look at a girl's tank top and we see spaghetti straps and less underarm coverage. This is, functionally speaking, completely backwards. If you think about it, the wider straps on boys' tank tops would provide better coverage for bra straps. The better underarm coverage would also provide better coverage for the bra, making a better overall fit for a girl or a woman. The boys don't need to cover boys bra straps, and they also don't have anything of interest up there. So they could have less underarm coverage and spaghetti straps, and it would make more sense for them. But instead, we see teenage girls with bra straps falling off the sides of their spaghetti strap tank tops and the top edges of their bra under their arms, which is at the very least tacky, but provides a very poor fit and isn't very practical, but it shows more skin. This is not about function, fit, or coverage on a hot day. Yeah, we want a tank top. It's a hot day. It's 100 degrees outside. Totally fine. But it's not about function and fit. It's about how much skin is showing. Why do girls have to show more skin than boys? Tell me that. Girls' clothing is more about exposing as much as humanly possible without getting flagged for indecency, which is almost non-existent these days. And yet girls are shamed and blamed for the attention they receive, even though society is the one designing their clothing to put them on display in the first place. This is the problem. Nobody sees it. Like, oh, it's all purity culture. No, it's not. Look at the damn clothes. Honestly, if everything were all equal, boys and girls tank tops would cover the same amount. If everything were all equal, boys would also be wearing booty shorts. Why are they not? Think about it. There's a reason. Women are taught to see objectification as empowerment, and I see this everywhere, especially in women leaving high-demand religion, because they were shamed for showing their shoulders. They were shamed for showing their thighs, which is also completely ridiculous, and they were made responsible for men's thoughts and choices and all of that, which is all completely wrong, yes. But now they turn and go, okay, showing as much skin as I possibly can is liberating. No. It still plays into the patriarchal system that expects you to be seen and not heard. True empowerment doesn't come from external validation or how much skin you can show. That is not empowerment. If you think you're giving the middle finger to patriarchy by showing more skin than you were allowed to in religion, you have no idea what you're doing. Empowerment comes from self-ownership, for being respected for who you are, not how you look or how much skin you're showing. Is there a reason that you need to? Literally, beyond it being a hot day and wearing some shorts and a tank top, what? I don't understand. I really don't. Women must stop buying into the patriarchal narrative on both sides of the fence. Because if you fall into it on the religious side and you fall into it on the secular side, but one way or another, it's going to get you. It's time to break the chains and reject the system that profits off of our insecurity, submission, and objectification. I'm going to say that again. It's time to break the chains and reject the system that profits off of our insecurity, submission, and objectification. Stop dressing for male approval, and you know you do it. Don't even start with me. I'm a woman. I've been in the dressing rooms. I've gotten ready for proms and dances and all kinds of things with girls. I know what you say. Dress in a way that makes you feel powerful, comfortable, and aligned with who you are, not to be seen. Stop accepting objectification as normal. Speak up when men make inappropriate comments, when women's bodies are reduced to entertainment, and when the media glorifies unrealistic beauty standards. Don't engage with it. Condemn it. It has to be condemned. Women's bodies are not entertainment. I'm sorry. She is an intelligent human being that deserves to be respected for all that she is, not to be reduced to some male pleasure trap. Stop chasing perfection. You were never meant to look like an Instagram filter. Stop participating in a cycle that keeps women as objects instead of equals. The moment we stop playing by their rules, the system loses its power over us. The moment we stop buying into their skimpy, scanty clothes, it's not about controlling what men think about us, in the sense that they are responsible for their own thoughts. The problem is, we are not objects for display. That's the problem. It's not about controlling men's thoughts. It's not about shame. It's not about guilt. It's not about your body being bad. Your body is beautiful. But at the same time, you deserve respect as a human being. Women are not ornaments. We are not commodities. We are not bodies to be consumed. And we need to stop acting like we are. We are powerful, sovereign beings who deserve to be seen for our intelligence, our leadership, our wisdom, our power, not our waistlines. Where in your life have you sought approval for how you look instead of claiming respect for who you are? And what would it feel like to break free from that cycle forever? There's also a double standard of success, unfair expectations placed on women. Women have been told they can, quote, have it all, a successful career, a thriving family, personal fulfillment. But what they weren't told is that they'd be expected to do it all while being undervalued, criticized, and dismissed. In a patriarchal society, success is defined differently for men than for women. The same ambition, drive, and self-focus that is praised in men is used against women to shame them into submission. When a man is career-driven, he's ambitious. When a woman is career-driven, she's selfish. A man who prioritizes his work is seen as determined, powerful, and a good, quote, provider. A woman who prioritizes her work is seen as neglectful, cold, or choosing career over family. Think about it. A man working late is committed to his job. A woman working late is putting work before her family. A man negotiating a raise is assertive. A woman negotiating a raise is difficult, entitled, or ungrateful. Women are expected to be grateful for whatever scraps they get, while men are encouraged to demand more. When a man focuses on his personal growth, he's a leader. When a woman does, she's self-absorbed. When a man invests in self-improvement, he's seen as a visionary, a leader, someone committed to bettering himself. When a woman prioritizes her personal growth, she is told she is selfish, self-indulgent, or neglecting her, quote, real responsibilities. Men going to the gym, reading leadership books, attending personal development retreats is bettering himself. The same woman doing this, or a woman doing the same thing, narcissistic, spends too much time on herself. She's not being a good mother or wife. And it goes on and on. Men are encouraged to grow. Women are expected to shrink. Women are constantly forced to justify their choices, defend their ambition, prove that their success isn't coming at the expense of someone else's comfort. Men don't have to do that. Nobody's worrying about how much time a man is spending with his children. Think about it. Women are expected to have it all while doing it all. We were sold the lie of balance, the idea that women can be perfect employees, perfect mothers, perfect wives, perfect friends, and still have time for self-care, personal growth, and passion. The reality? Women are expected to carry the emotional, mental, and physical workload of life without complaint. And the emotional, mental, and physical workload of being a mother and everyone else's issues as well. A full-time job and raising children. Run a household and look flawless while doing it. Be emotionally available for everyone else while ignoring your own needs. Be independent, but not so independent that you intimidate men. Have dreams, but not at the expense of a man's ego. Meanwhile, men are praised for doing the bare minimum. A father watching his own children, he's babysitting for his wife. A husband doing one load of laundry, he's a really good husband. A boyfriend showing basic emotional support, he's a rare gem. They get praised for doing, like, the bare minimum. Not showing up as an actual father, but just babysitting. Women are expected to juggle everything, while men are celebrated for doing less than the bare minimum. Stop apologizing for being ambitious. Stop shrinking yourself to make others comfortable. Stop carrying the full weight of work, family, and home while men get a free pass. Where in your life have you felt pressured to ignore your body, your intuition, your emotions in order to fit into society's mold? And what would it look like to fully reclaim your power without guilt? So we're going to look at the role of religious conditioning and the servitude of women, because this is another big piece of this puzzle. For centuries, religious institutions have been one of the strongest forces reinforcing patriarchal control over women. Many religious teachings do not empower women. They condition women to serve, submit, and sacrifice. Women are not just discouraged from stepping into leadership and autonomy, they are actively shamed for it or prevented from doing it. Their spirituality, wisdom, and personal desires are treated as secondary to the roles assigned to them: wife, mother, caretaker, and silent supporter. And that is what they are expected to do. In fact, in Christianity, a woman being a leader in a home or a decision maker or anything like that, the idea is that she will deceive her family and they will be led to destruction by Satan. Jesus didn't subjugate women. Paul did. This is one of the greatest misconceptions in Christian teachings, is the idea that Jesus himself relegated women to secondary roles, or that it is God's will for women to be relegated to subjugation. This isn't true at all. In reality, Jesus consistently elevated women, broke cultural and religious norms, and treated women as spiritual equals. It wasn't Jesus who barred women from leadership. It was later religious figures like Paul. And in fact, if we look at Bible scholars, a lot of these books where women are barred from authority, barred from all leadership and all of that, they weren't even written by Paul anyway. We don't even know who wrote them. But we won't get into that because Christians, they believe that this is the inherent word of God. So, but do we want to listen to God or do we want to listen to Paul? Because Jesus is here, right? In Christianity, Jesus is God incarnate, and Paul is in direct contradiction to Jesus, and yet we choose Paul over Jesus. That's an interesting thing. That's an interesting choice. It is Paul who has been used to reinforce patriarchal structures within Christianity. So let's look at the actual accounts of Jesus's interactions with women and how they contradict the male-dominated religious hierarchy that came after him. Let's look at the Mary and Martha story. Most people have no idea what this story is about. The radical act of sitting at a rabbi's feet. So one of the most misunderstood passages in the Bible is the story of Mary and Martha in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Many have interpreted Martha's frustration as being about Mary not helping with housework. That's not true. In Jewish tradition, sitting at the feet of a rabbi was a position of discipleship, and it was reserved exclusively for men. Mary was breaking cultural and religious rules by taking on the role of a disciple sitting at Jesus' feet to learn. Martha wasn't just upset about the chores. She was frustrated because Mary was violating gender expectations. That flips it on its head, doesn't it? Nobody wants you to know this. If you don't understand Jewish culture and tradition at the time, you're not going to understand the meaning of this story. Most of Christianity doesn't. Because they don't want to know, they just want to subjugate the women. How did Jesus respond to Mary sitting in a position where only a male was supposed to sit? And he says this, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken away from her." So he's basically saying, Mary chose better. Like, she absolutely belongs here. Interesting. Jesus didn't send Mary back to the kitchen. He defended her right to learn, to sit at his feet as an equal, to step into a role traditionally reserved for men. Interesting. The first witness of the resurrection was a woman. In the ancient world, women's testimonies were considered legally invalid. Did you know that? See, if you don't understand the culture, you don't understand the meaning of what's going on. Women were not considered trustworthy witnesses. But who did Jesus choose to be the first witness and proclaim the resurrection? John 20, 16 through 18. Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Okay. Interesting. Because he's telling this woman to be the witness to the men. In the ancient world, this is way upside down. She was not only the first to see the risen Christ, but she was also given a direct commission to go and tell the male disciples. Jesus could have chosen Peter or John or someone else. He entrusted the message to a woman. This was a radical act in a culture that did not allow women to be witnesses or to testify. In their courts of law, their equivalent of courts of law, women were not allowed to testify. If Jesus wanted women to remain silent, why did he make a woman the first preacher of the resurrection? The first time Jesus publicly declares he is the Messiah, it was to a woman. Did you know that? One of the most striking moments in Jesus' ministry is when he openly proclaims himself as the Messiah for the first time. And who does he choose to reveal this to? In John 4, 25 through 26, the woman said, "I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." This woman was not just any woman, she was a Samaritan, an outsider, a group despised by the Jews. Not only did Jesus speak to her, breaking cultural and religious barriers, but he entrusted her with the revelation of his identity. This woman then went and told the people of her village about meeting Jesus, and many believed because of her testimony. So here again, we have a woman that is going and preaching and teaching about the identity of Jesus, and yet in Christianity today, this woman would be a heretic. She would be condemned. People would say she's going to deceive people. And yet, this is what was happening in their own Bible. This first missionary in the Gospels was a woman. Jesus showed the way that women were equal, that they were valuable, that they could be missionaries, that they could proclaim messages and preach and teach and sit at the feet of a rabbi and do all the things that men could do. And then Paul shows up on the scene with an opposing message to Jesus. Time and time again, Jesus uplifted women, including them as disciples, entrusting them with his message and defying patriarchal norms of his time and his culture. And then Paul enters the scene. And we see a drastic shift in the way women are treated in Christian teachings, which is also interesting because we have Eunia, who was an apostle among the apostles, right? We have many women leaders in the church of the time, and so the Bible contradicts itself, right? And no one wants to see it. So we see in 1 Timothy, "Let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet." Now, there's a lot that can be taught about that and what the actual meaning was and culture and all the things. We're not going to go into that. But these are not things that Jesus ever said. These are things that Paul said. And we use them to trump the example of Jesus. I find that incredibly fascinating. There's another one in 1 Corinthians where it says the woman should keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak. Again, a lot of Bible scholars believe that these two verses were added on later. But these statements directly contradict Jesus' actions and teachings. And this is the thing. I love Jesus. I don't like the Christian dogma and religion itself because of what they've done to women and because how they have twisted the Bible to fit their own narrative. They don't listen to the Bible scholars. They don't listen to the people that actually know the culture and know what was being said and know the original language. They just want it to mean what they want it to mean. And a lot of women are leaving religion because of what these men are doing. Jesus openly taught women, gave them authority, sent them to preach, and then Paul silences them, and Christians choose Paul over Jesus every time. Paul was not one of the original 12 apostles. And even the original 12 apostles questioned his authority in Galatians chapter 2. Nobody wants to pay attention to that either. The truth is, many religious leaders have chosen to follow Paul's teachings on women over Jesus' actions and teachings. Reclaiming the true teachings of Jesus is what needs to happen. It's time to reject the patriarchal distortion of Christianity that has subjugated women under Paul's teachings instead of embracing the liberating message of Jesus. Women were never meant to be silent. Women were never meant to be secondary. Women were never meant to be excluded from leadership. When I became a Christian pastor, that was when my faith began to unravel in that area as well. I thought I was going to find a spiritual home in Christianity. And what I found was I was hated by other Christian women because I was a pastor. They condemn you. They say you are going to lead people astray. This is women. I mean, men are vicious as well, but it's actually other women that are dragging other women down, trying to hold them in submission. And I started to realize this doesn't feel like a spiritual home to me. My voice wasn't wanted. And you know what the kicker was, and I'm going to tell you, and Christians have never been able to respond to this ever. I see Christians all the time when someone calls out the idea of the eternal torment of hell and how no loving God would do such a thing. And they say, well, people, they've denied God. They've rejected God. It's their own fault. They don't have to go there. And you know what? I politely comment this to them every single time. In 2016, actually started in 2015, my husband and I were going through the adoption process, international adoption process. And we found a little girl in some of the photos of an orphanage. She was blind. And we chose her. We went through a 9-month process to adopt her. Traveled over to China, spent 2 weeks in China. The first week we spent in her home province. It was in, the city was Taiyuan. I know a lot of people think it's Taiwan. It's not. It's Taiyuan. And there we completed the adoption on the Chinese side. And then we went down to Guangzhou where we completed the U.S. side of the adoption and brought her home. Years later, my husband and I would leave Mormonism. I became a commissioned pastor. And then I realized Christian doctrine. My daughter was from a small, tiny village in northern China. It was dirt roads to get there. These people had never heard of God before. They'd never heard of Jesus. That Christianity is not legal there. The official religion is atheism. You are not allowed to proselyte there. You can have a Bible for yourself, but if you're even caught sharing that, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And guess what? I realized, as a Christian pastor, I'd have to tell my daughter, her parents, she's never going to see them again. They're going to be burning in hell for eternity, according to Christian beliefs. Her siblings, she probably does have a sibling. It was probably the reason she was abandoned, because she was abandoned as a child, not as an infant. She was abandoned between the ages of 3 and 5 years old. She's not going to know that sibling ever. Grandparents, cousins, forget about it. They're all in hell, honey. They're all in hell. They didn't reject God. They didn't even know about God. They didn't reject Jesus. They'd never heard of Jesus. And all anyone in ministry could ever tell me was, we don't understand the ways of God. And that's when I realized no loving God would create a situation where I would have to tell a child that that was the fate of their family members. The subjugation of women and the eternal hellish torment for anyone who's never even heard of God. Or anyone who was born in an area where the predominant religion wasn't Christianity. It just didn't feel right to me. It's the same story. These abusive practices where we just slap God's name on it. Jesus never placed these restrictions on women. Men did. Paul's writings are not commands from Christ, but opinions shaped by the Roman world he lived in. Women have always been central to spiritual leadership, and it's time to reclaim that truth. How has religious conditioning made you believe you are meant to be silent, submissive, or secondary? And what would it look like to reclaim that power that Jesus himself affirmed in you? Women are raised to believe they exist to serve men. Many religions frame a woman's greatest purpose as being a good wife and a good mother. With the entire trajectory of her life centered around serving a man and raising children, she should not have any ambitions, goals, educations, careers, or anything else. Women are rarely encouraged to explore their own desires, dreams, callings outside of this mold. If they do, they're seen as rebellious, selfish, or misguided. Religious texts, sermons, and cultural traditions paint men as natural leaders and women as followers, teaching women that their highest virtue is obedience. The hidden message, the Christian message to women, is dogma, not divine mandate. Telling women that men were the ones divinely appointed to lead them, and I see this all the time, men saying, how you lead your wife, how you lead your wife. I'm like, no, 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 honey, you guys are partners. Whenever you have a leader, whenever you create a hierarchy, you create a situation that is disastrous for the one that's being led. She is her own. She is her own. She has her own ideas, her own opinions, her own desires, and they need to be honored, and she needs to be able to make them without approval. Women do not exist to support, submit, and sacrifice. Although that's what the Christian message is. Biblical womanhood, as they call it. Problem is, they use the Proverbs 31 woman. What they don't realize is that woman owned several businesses. She owned a tract of land and had employees that farmed that land for her. She made belts for the sailors. She was a businesswoman. Oops. But that's not what they teach you, right? In Christianity, a woman's success is measured by how well she serves, not by her own growth, wisdom, fulfillment, how she helps communities, or anything else. If she dares step outside that role, she is seen as a threat to the natural order and accused of rejecting God's plan. She is told that she's being too independent, ambitious, or outspoken, which makes her less desirable as a wife and mother. She's pressured to stay in her place for fear of being seen as sinful, disobedient, unworthy, or potentially leading others astray. One of the most insidious forms of religious conditioning is the way women are held responsible for the thoughts, actions, and morality of men. The modesty doctrine. Now, I already talked about how secular society is like, hey, take it all off, honey, because we want to see it. And then you got religious modesty doctrine. Women must prevent men from sinning. It's your responsibility. Girls are told to dress modestly so they don't tempt men into impure thoughts. Men are never held accountable for their own abuses of women, their own impure thoughts. And I'm thinking, a woman's wearing short shorts and a tank top and you're having impure thoughts? We really should be throwing you in prison right now because you should not be having impure thoughts about a complete stranger because they're wearing some short shorts. Your sexual desires are way out of control if that's what's happening. Women's bodies are treated as dangerous, distracting, inherently sinful, instead of holding men accountable for their own damn behavior. Yes, I'm going to swear, because I can. The message is clear. If a man lusts, it's your fault. It's your fault, not his. Of course, not. No. It's not a problem that he's sexualizing complete strangers. And this is what I say. In secular society, we say, oh, men sexualizing complete strangers? Totally normal. Men purchasing women, men thinking women are sources of sexual gratification and entertainment. All of it is abusive and terrible. But we normalize it all. Religions normalize this. Secular society normalizes that. It's all abuse. Just kind of presented differently. Victims of domestic violence, coercion, and abuse are often told to pray, forgive, and submit more, as if their suffering is their spiritual test. How do I know this? Because I learned it in ministry school, and I have also seen Mormonism do the same thing. Bishops do the same thing over and over, covering up abuse, covering up sexual abuse of children, all kinds of things. A guy comes in, confesses. It's in the news just in the last couple of weeks. A man was sexually abusing children 30 years ago. And after years of doing it, went and confessed to his bishop. The bishop worked with him, whatever, realized bishops have absolutely no training whatsoever in anything. Man continued to abuse children over the next 30 years or whatever, and some of them are coming forward now. He would never went to jail. It was never reported, and he continued to do it. Instead of holding abusers accountable, religious communities often pressure women to, quote, fix the relationship by being more obedient. They consider that Jesus will just take care of it. Oh, you've confessed. Okay, you're repentant. You won't do it anymore. They don't report. Many women stay trapped in dangerous, toxic relationships because they've been taught that God hates divorce. That leaving would mean they failed as a wife or a mother or as a woman of faith. They are told that they're not submitting well enough. There are so many messages they're told. If men lack self-control, women must modify their behavior to accommodate the man's lack of self-control. So if he has a lack of self-control, you need to change the way you dress. You need to submit to him better. You need to change what you're doing. A woman's suffering is not a reason to leave. It's a reason to pray harder and sacrifice or submit more. How do I know that? I was told if you have a woman who has been hospitalized or needed medical treatment because of abuse, you are told to tell her that they can live separated, but they are not to get divorced because the only reason for divorce is infidelity. If that has not happened, she does not have a right to get divorced in the eyes of God. I was taught this in ministry school, okay? This is how they see things. Women should endure pain and hardship quietly without seeking justice because their highest virtue is submission. And a lot of times they will not overtly say this. They will deny it because it sounds really bad. This isn't empowerment. This is control. And then I want to get into the myth of the, quote, spiritual leader. Many religious institutions bar women from leadership altogether while promoting men, regardless of their wisdom, emotional intelligence, or spiritual connection at all. Women are excluded from positions of authority. Women are excluded from any decision-making capacity at all. In Mormonism, I can tell you that's 100% true. In Christianity, it depends. There are some women pastors, but they are hated in Christianity very, very much. Probably, obviously, not in their own congregations, but it's pretty toxic. I know because I am one. Or I was one. I don't associate with the Christian religion anymore just because of its abusive nature. And also because I cannot in good conscience tell my child she'll never see any of her family in the afterlife because they didn't know Jesus. So most women carry the emotional and spiritual weight of religious communities. I know in Mormonism, the women are the ones that plan the entire Christmas dinner, Christmas party for the church. They are the ones that plan and execute and carry out every party, everything. I remember being in a young women's organization, and when we would try to do activities with the young men's organization, the women did everything. They did all the planning. They organized everything. They scheduled everything, and the men just showed up. Women carry the weight of it on their backs, but they have to get permission for everything they do, whereas the men don't. Religions erase the feminine divine, prioritizing masculine representations of God while downplaying the sacred feminine, which is another reason I just cannot participate. Women need representation in deity. I'm sorry, they do. And that's just how I see it. And other people can disagree, and that's also fine if you're comfortable with that. Women's spiritual gifts are diminished. Intuition, healing, and deep wisdom. Women's intuition. We hear that all the time, right? It's dismissed as emotional rather than powerful. Women's intuition needs to be valued more. A woman who claims her spiritual authority is often seen as too outspoken, too emotional, too radical, heretical. But the hidden message is men are the ones who receive divine inspiration and authority. Women are expected to follow, not lead. A woman's spiritual power is only valued or even valid when it is in the service of men. It's time to reclaim the truth. Women are not spiritually inferior, secondary, or meant to be silent. Women are powerful, sovereign beings with direct access to divine wisdom, the same as men. Divine power, divine wisdom, it all flows through all of us. Breaking free from religious conditioning and reclaiming your sovereignty. You need to break free from societal conditioning, religious conditioning, all of it, before you can claim sovereignty. Many of you have been conditioned by feminist ideology. Did you know where that came from? You might want to, as much as I've done a deep dive history on my religious background, you might want to do a deep dive history on where your beliefs came from, because I think you might be pretty shocked. It's not what you think. Stop believing your worth is measured by how well you serve others. Stop believing your worth is measured by what you look like. Stop carrying the burden of male behavior and morality. Stop waiting for permission to step into your power. Your purpose is not to be a man's wife, mother, or servant. Your purpose is yours to define. You are not responsible for a man's self-control, thoughts, or choices. He is. You do not need a male spiritual leader to access God, to access the divine. The divine is already within you. You already have a direct connection to the divine. No intermediary needed. So where have you been told that your purpose was to serve others instead of being encouraged to follow your own path? And what would it look like to finally put yourself first? The loss of self. From birth, women are trained to be pleasers of men and others, to be put on display, silent, caretakers, peacekeepers, constantly monitoring how they're perceived. Over time, this conditioning leads to ignoring your intuition, doubting your gut feelings, and seeking external validation. Feeling guilty for wanting more in your life. Believing that prioritizing your needs is selfish. Losing your voice. Hesitating to speak up in conversations where men dominate. Feeling like you're never enough. No matter how much you do, it's still not enough. Where in your life have you silenced yourself to keep the peace or to avoid being seen as too much? Reclaiming power starts with awareness. Once you see the conditioning, you can't unsee it. On both sides, not just religious. It isn't just about seeing the conditioning in religion or in secular society. It's about seeing the conditioning in everyday life. What clothing options are even available to you? I went into a clothing store. I wanted to buy some tank tops. My husband and I are going on a trip together, and there were some darling tank tops that I wanted. And they were all crop tops that show your stomach. Now, granted, I'm really short, so it doesn't show as much of a stomach as it would on a taller woman. But here's the thing. Okay, let me tell you something. I'm 106 pounds, okay? So this is not about me being, like, overweight or whatever. But I'm 48 years old, okay? Yeah, I'm 106. I'm a size 2. But I don't want to show my stomach. But why is it that I go into a freaking clothing store and I can't find a freaking tank top that will cover my stomach? Could I show it? My stomach's flat as a board, thank you very much. Does it need to be? No, but it is. So it's not about, oh, I wouldn't, whatever. I'm 48. I am not in the business of trying to get men's attention, trying to show off my body, trying to prove I have a flat stomach, whatever. I am going to wineries. I'm going to wine tastings, to nice places. I want to look classy. I'm not looking for the men's attention. I'm not looking to, like, look at me, look at my flat stomach. That ain't it. That's not where it's at. When you're 48 years old, it doesn't matter how thin you are, how fit you are, how amazing you look. That's not where I want my worth to be. I don't care about what men think. I don't care if they thought I looked ugly. I don't care if they thought I looked hot. I don't care what their thoughts are. I am not policing their thoughts. I'm not policing mine. I just want to look classy and feel good about myself. And I am not about showing off my body. That's not what my life is about. And really, honestly, I don't want that to be what my value is. I am standing up and saying women's value is not in how much skin we're showing for the men to see. And I know you don't think that's what it is. It is what it is. So I stand up and I'm like, excuse me, I would like to find some clothing. I don't mind about the short shorts or whatever. If I'm going out on the beach, that's fine. But I can't even find a beautiful, woven, gorgeous, like, sleeveless top. That's not a crop top. It's sad. I'm sorry, women, but it's sad. And then we have the way that men talk about women. They're going to talk about your body because why? We put the clothes out that show the skin so we can see it, so we can talk about it, so we can judge it, so we can everything. You don't understand. You are in the matrix, honey. Why do you think that your clothing exposes way more skin than the men's clothing. Why? It ain't about modesty, honey. It's not. They don't want you to be modest. Secular society don't want you to be modest. We don't care about looking at men's bodies, so they don't show them off. The way they objectify women's bodies in our language and our culture, and we ignore women's needs and prioritize men every day of the week. We prioritize men's visual pleasure, and that's why your clothes look the way they do. Breaking the cycle means choosing differently, from honoring rest and your feminine cycles, instead of forcing yourself into constant productivity, setting boundaries, refusing to be the emotional laborer in relationships, setting boundaries of like, I don't care if the world thinks I should be showing all of the skin, I'm going to show respect for myself. I am not for the visual pleasure of men. You will see my intelligence. You will see my creativity. You will see my power. You will see my leadership skills. You ain't seeing the body. Take your power back. Prioritizing yourself without guilt, knowing that you are worthy of a life that fulfills you in whatever way that looks for you. Trusting your own wisdom and intuition, no longer waiting for external validation, and knowing you have a direct connection to the divine, if that is something that you want to work with. Depends on your own spiritual beliefs, and it doesn't matter where you are. Releasing fear-based programming and choosing self-trust over obedience. Reconnecting with the feminine divine, knowing that women hold equal spiritual power to men. Creating a life that honors your truth instead of living by the rules of others. And I want to give you a challenge before we close today. What is one area of your life where you will reclaim your power today? Because it's time to break free from all of it. The systems of patriarchy are built on women's silence, submission, and exhaustion. And the moment you choose to wake up and see the conditioning for what it is, you reclaim your power and you become unstoppable. So I want you to reflect on one belief about yourself that's rooted in patriarchal conditioning, and then I want you to challenge that belief, and I want you to write it down. Write down the challenge of that belief system, and I want you to set one boundary this week that protects your energy and your honor and dignity. Whatever that boundary needs to be. Where have you been falling into the patriarchal traps of secular society, religion, in your relationship, whatever it is, and I want you to set a boundary. I'm not falling into this trap anymore. So if you've enjoyed this podcast, if you've made it this far, amazing. This was quite the rant, but it's something I'm passionate about, if you couldn't tell. But if you enjoyed it, follow Soulful Insights for more episodes on breaking free, on reclaiming your truth, and on emotional healing and stepping into your full spiritual sovereignty. If you are looking for ways to reprogram your mind and to overcome a lot of limiting beliefs, religious programming, anxiety, trauma, whatever it is, please contact me. You can connect with me on my Instagram at Tandy Hartle is my handle. You can connect with me there and we can discuss hypnotherapy packages and all of that. I offer faith transition coaching, all kinds of things. So contact me there if you are interested in any of those things. I would love to hear from you. I love to hear your stories. I love to connect with you. And I want to offer you one final thought. Your power was never lost, only hidden beneath layers of conditioning. The moment you reclaim it, you become unstoppable.